Hello and good evening, I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutub.
Welcome to Consider This, the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now tonight on the show, we're going to be taking a closer look at the true scale of youth unemployment in Malaysia. Has the true extent of the economic vulnerabilities faced by young Malaysians been adequately understood and addressed by policymakers? So later in the show, we're going to be speaking to policy analysts about the available options to address the severity of the problem. But first, we begin with news of a DBKL notice banning refugees from entering the Kuala Lumpur wholesale market. Now, the DBKL notice also stated that foreigners with valid papers must be accompanied by a Malaysian to enter the market. So I don't think any reason was given for the ban that was stated in the notice, but it does come after the DBKL announcing last month that license holders at wholesale, public and private markets are only allowed to hire locals that have been approved by the KL mayor. Now, Sharad, I found this news a little ironic, given that it came to light on World Refugee Day, a day to raise awareness about the plight of refugees around the world. And here we are in Malaysia, not allowing them to simply enter a market.
Well, you know, Melissa, I mean, just to give the DBKL the benefit of the doubt, I guess they are implementing what is policy at this point in time, which doesn't allow refugees to work.
Sure.
And, you know, and because the refugees have been found working illegally in some of these markets, I guess that this attempt to manage that problem is what this notice is about. But it goes back, I think, Melissa, to the many suggestions made over the many years about how we should deal with and treat humanely and with some, I think, a level of pragmatism,
right,
the question of refugees among us, right? So there have been suggestions that, in fact, by making them making work something that they can do legally, it's actually good for the economy.
Yes.
Add, you know, I think Ideas has come out with some rough calculations about some $3 billion being added to the economy. And of course, when you have to work and you do it with the full protection of the law, then you're less vulnerable to
exploitation.
And, you know, extortion,
yes,
from those in authority who can now use your vulnerability to enrich themselves.
Well, I have some numbers from Ideas that you cited a bit earlier. You're absolutely right. 3 billion ringgit added to the Malaysian economy through higher spending if refugees are given the right to work. An increase in tax revenues, total contribution of 50 million ringgit each year by 2024. And in fact, locals will benefit too. Refugees in the economic system will help create some 4,000 jobs for Malaysians. So so those are some of the kind of quantitative backing information that we have coming up from Ideas on why we should give refugees the right to work.
You know, Melissa, I think sometimes in the public debate about refugees or migrants, there's a kind of zero-sum mentality, right? So that we say, okay, 160,000 refugees having the right to work will somehow diminish the ability of locals to find jobs,
right,
and so on and so forth. I mean, that is the way it's framed, and I don't know if that's in fact the truth. And because refugees, unlike you know, migrants who come here specifically for work because they've been pushed out of their country because of warfare and so on and so forth, might actually be very skilled individuals. And the question is, why don't we have a policy that tries to identify the skills among the refugee population and, you know, leverage on that so that it's in fact a win-win for both Malaysians, the Malaysian economy, and the individual refugees.
Yeah, perhaps time to relook some of our policies surrounding refugees here in Malaysia. But in other news, we have the Centre for Orang Asli Concerns. They've highlighted that loggers have resumed logging activities in at least two areas populated by the Orang Asli. Now, this includes the same site where the Temias had set up a blockade a year ago. The then Pakatan Menteri Besar, now Perikatan Menteri Besar, had halted the logging only temporarily, but that logging halt had also continued under the MCO. But now we have the Centre for Orang Asli Concerns warning also that the resumption of logging activities could affect other Orang Asli communities, particularly in Kelantan.
So we return to these questions, it seems, you know, on a regular basis, Melissa. The Orang Asli community, the environment and the ecosystems in which they live, not just for their livelihood, but because of the cultural values, the religious values that those ecosystems give to them, under threat by developers in collusion with politicians at the level of the state.
Right.
You know, and so the question, this tussle always comes up. Now, the question is, why is this the case? Is it because, at least at the state level, you know, land is a resource from which the state can get some revenues and they are loath to give that up? Mm-hmm. And also, those resources are seen as, what do you think, Melissa?
I mean, money-making machines.
Absolutely.
So
they're seen
driven,
essentially,
right?
In terms of their, in a very crude sense, their economic worth, right? Mm. Not their long-term economic worth, but their short-term economic worth. You log a forest, you get those logs out, some money goes to the
state. I think that's completely a valid point to make. You know, the way we treat the environment, I think, could tie into how Orang Asli communities are marginalized within Malaysia. You know, these are natural ecosystems that they use to depend on their livelihoods. It's more than just making money. It is a way of life. And I think just looking at it through the prism of economic utility has caused for us to marginalize these communities.
Interestingly enough, during the Pakatan Harapan time, the intervention of the Minister of National Unity and also the Attorney General's Chambers sort of were trying to negotiate a solution. I think the law is around native customary land still being fought out in our court system. It's interesting to see whether any political formation in this country, Pakatan Harapan, you know, Perikatan Nasional, Pakatan Harapan 2.0, whatever it is, might come in the future or not come in the future, will be able to form a policy that, in the interest of everybody, including the Orang Asli communities.
All right, well, if this logging activity continues, we're going to keep a close eye on this story as it develops. But for now, in just a few minutes, we're going to be speaking to policy analysts about their read on the true scale of youth unemployment. Stay tuned to consider this.